This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Mike Shope.
Hey, put a little. I never get this line out the first time. It's not even good. Hey, put a little bit more in there, cowboy.
And the bulldog.
What's your degree in?
Kicking ass and taking names.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Well, they gave us an extra hour today to figure out what we wanted to say about the Bills' victory yesterday in Indianapolis. Football Monday on WGR, brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. Eric Wood, we also thought it was only fair to give him the extra hour, so he'll join us at 5. So, the Chiefs, that's what I think about yesterday. The Chiefs.
That damn field goal. The bloody blocked field goal.
Gosh. Which, isn't it a little bit better?
No.
With them undefeated?
No.
Okay.
No. No, I don't... I very rarely am thinking about, oh, I said this thing, and if it comes to pass, like, I'll get to take a victory lap. Like, because who really cares? I don't care that much. Nobody out there, I think, really care. But for like a month, I've been in here going, just stick them with one loss, please. Just get them a loss. And if the Bills can hold serve, bring them in here with a chance to pass them in the standings, like, that would be delicious. And I know the schedule's hard after that, and I, you know, all that went with it. I just really wanted it. And to be staring at it like that, like, the Bills game is winding down, and I'm staring at a game cast waiting to just come on, kick a field goal. It took forever on the game cast, so it just didn't update for the longest time. And well, I guess maybe I know why, because it got blocked. But it just
no, it should have been faster. I was watching it too.
It was slow. So that really, you know, took the wind out of me a little bit yesterday, because I thought we were home. I mean, that Denver led that game almost all day. Like, it wasn't until the Chiefs went up 16-14. That was the first time they were ahead all game. Like, this has got to be the day. No. Anyway, but good job, Bills. I mean, and
good job, Bills.
8-2 is tremendous. I mean, it's a record I would not have even, like, would you take? I wouldn't even have dreamt of 8-2.
We found one you would have said no to before the season. We found one you would have said no to.
Right. Yes. Would you take?
We found one you would have said yes to.
Yeah, I would have taken 8-2. I would have signed in blood for 8-2.
Well, so, we would not have needed that.
Good job, Bills. And yeah, I mean, I hear you. They're undefeated, so you can tag them with that first loss. You know, fine.
It's just a little bit more. One of your favorite words, luster, on this game with Kansas City still having 17-0 in the window.
I can't argue with that.
And if they get it,
it's not like it would have been lusterless if they were 8-1, but it is. There's more luster.
There is more. There's a little bit more luster.
Yeah.
Sean McDermott is speaking now. He's already ruled Keon Coleman out for this game. And on Dalton Kincaid, according to Sal Capaccio, McDermott, quote, "We'll see how he fares in the next couple days." So we have that to be monitoring. But so no Coleman. already for this game. And I wasn't here.
And Cooper is, we'll see.
Cooper.
Says McDermott. We'll see. That's the quote I see.
I'm officially signing for the weird vibes on Cooper that the caller the other day brought up. I just, you know, just a few little subtle kind of things that make you wonder just how McDermott feels about Cooper, which I'm sure I'll be told is unfair. But there is that update. And
I might even want to tell you it's unfair.
Okay. Well, that makes things more interesting. And the Matt Milano practice window was opened. McDermott is saying now, but he will not play this week.
Okay.
Still, that's kind of exciting.
That's good news. Yeah, sure. I'm not surprised at all about Coleman. Expected right. Kincaid to be vague. You know, any explanation of that, you know, I guess I was hoping that would be the best case scenario, that it would be vague and not like definitively out a month or something.
Here's something else you might not want to agree with. When Kincaid went out of that game yesterday, I thought, you know what? Maybe this offense will start to make a little bit better sense in the way that it doesn't really work for yesterday because they were down the two receivers and really needed anybody they could get in this game. But the whole thing with Kincaid has just seemed like it's being jammed in. Just never quite right. But they're winning, and I don't really think there are problems per se. But now it's not better if he's out. But I didn't hate it.
Well, they did go to a lot of 11 personnel.
Which is good.
With Knox as the one tight end. And yeah,
That's served them pretty well over the years.
It has, and I might be more open to this if Cooper and Coleman were a part of that. But it doesn't sound, well, Coleman's definitely not going to be, and I don't know how optimistic. I was hoping, I meant to finish off the thought on the estimations on the injuries. I was hoping for good news on Cooper today. Not, we'll see. I mean, that's not bad news, I guess. It's just sort of, meh. It's nothing.
It's what, all right, you're back, the ball's back in my court. What it is McDermott, it is a way of saying, don't ask me. Because he's always got the, you know, next couple days, the whole point, the whole business about no reason to speculate. On Cooper, it's like, oh, I guess he's going to decide. Don't you think? Like, isn't it your opinion that he's just kind of like not comfortable? Could play, but isn't?
Yes. Yeah, like pain tolerance. I think Cooper himself, I don't think McDermott said that. McDermott did make the comment that the caller brought up to us last week about, you know, it's hard to say what kind of impact he's had because he's been in the training room a lot. And, you know, I thought at the time when the caller brought it up, having not heard it, I thought, well, that's a little like leaning your way there. And so I don't know what this is today, but I think on Friday, Cooper said it's pain tolerance, whether he can comfortably even catch the ball.
And that might make you, if it's going back a while, and it's really just kind of trivial at this point, but after the first game he missed, when it was also Benford who missed, and after that game, this is what, Tennessee? No, that's not Tennessee. That's too long ago. Seattle. That's not it either. It's last week.
Last week was the first game he missed.
And Benford missed.
Mm-hmm.
And after that game, he said, yeah, about one of them. One of them just didn't feel right. Words to that effect, which, you know, could have been Benford, but it feels to me more like
Cooper. I'm now seeing more on Cooper being tweeted, and he's McDermott used the phrasing pain tolerance. So, like, that's where we are. I think to be perfectly honest and fair about it, I've always felt like when a coach uses that kind of language, that there's the potential for the coach to be frustrated with the guy. It does sort of shift, I think, the focus of it to, can the guy just, you know, suck it up and get out there? And I think that's what it's code to the fans for. I think fans take it that way. I do.
It could rub the player wrong.
It could.
It's a tricky one because everybody wants specifics on these injuries. And most of the time, I mean, sometimes you can be specific or a coach will choose to be. Most of the time, though, you kind of want to just kind of leave it there. I don't know yet. Lindy's doing that now.
Right.
That happened today. It was half an hour went by. Like, we don't really know yet. It's just safer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't get it. You don't step in it doing that. But this particular area is one where I think a coach can run out of ideas for ways to describe the situation without possibly offending. And so that'll be an interesting one this week. Pain tolerance. It's not what the player would want to have said about them. But what are you supposed to say? Does he have a broken wrist? No. What are you supposed to say?
I think rather than saying pain tolerance, you just say he can't catch the ball right now.
Well, you could defend him.
Right.
Which isn't what's happening.
Right. Which is what makes it notable that he's using the phrasing he's using.
Yes.
I have to confront that.
Right. Point for me.
Yes.
Point for me. This kind of thing, I heard this come up on a hockey broadcast when Sal was on. And Brian asked him, you know, injuries and just how you want to play it here. And maybe it would be different if Kansas City had lost. Maybe it wouldn't. This goes for the Chiefs, too. Pacheco is getting close, Andy Reid said today. So maybe this goes for them, too. What exactly are the stakes? You can't live like you think. You can't go assuming that Kansas City will just win the rest of its games.
And no, they've been close to losing any one of these games they could have lost.
You can't do that in week 11.
No.
Right? I mean, there are seven weeks at least after this game. You can't play it, if you will, safe. Like, you really want to win, but you've got injuries to consider. Maybe it'll be Cooper. Maybe it'll be Kincaid. Maybe it'll be Pacheco. Maybe it'll be five other guys where you might have a tie to break. And, okay, well, on one hand, this game is really big. It's kind of almost the game of the year in the NFL. Almost every year, it sort of feels like that, especially when they move it later, like last year and this one. I mean, just it gets better and better.
I mean, the pregame show's coming here, Mike.
Well.
I mean, what else needs to be said?
I can't wait for more pictures of the new stadium in the fall.
Bill Cowher's going to have a buzzer in Orchard Park.
Oh,
I don't know.
You know it's big.
Do they still do buzzers? I don't even know. Anyway,
I don't either. But on one hand, it's 9-0 versus 8-2. There's the rivalry, the history. It's just about as good as it could get. Then it's, we want to play it safe, bye week next week. What do they always tell you about?
Five-game lead in the division.
Put it on the list.
Yep.
What do they always tell you about teams coming up on their bye week? Whether that was T.J. Hockenson with the Vikings or Jonathan Brooks with Carolina yesterday. Like, it's just better to give them the 2 weeks more. So whether that's Kincaid here or Cooper, there's that. The division lead, you've kind of been saying all year, yes, the one seed, you want to go for it. But to a point, after that, win the division, it's largely the same. You know, 2, 3, 4, it's not the same, but you could have a conversation about how hard to go at 2 versus 3. Still too early.
Yeah,
the one is very much in play, and you're playing that team this week.
Yeah, you gotta keep going. I mean, so
how do you break ties?
But how do I break ties? I think anybody with the bye approaching, I think anybody there's the remotest possibility that you could make yourself worse if you go out there and play than you don't play. And I don't know that I would say that every week. I mean, I think if this game were for the one seed at the end of the year, then, you know, it's time to put on all the splints and braces and shots and needles that you can possibly fathom. And, like, let's get out there because everything's on the line. So it's late enough in the year that it feels really big, but yet it also, you've got the bye, and I think we learned last year being healthy in January outranks beating the Chiefs in November or whenever they beat them last year.
Good point.
So, as much as it would sting, I wouldn't want to push anyone to get on the field in this game. And I'm the one in here clamoring for, like, let's go for the one, go for the one. I mean, I don't know what, you know, who knows what's going to happen to the Lions or even the 49ers in a few weeks. Like, people can get hurt before you play them. You go to play the Lions without Goff, like, that's a very different game.
LaPorta got hurt.
Right. So I got to do my level best, but my level best does not include pushing guys who are at risk. I just can't do it.
So are you going as far as to say, who you play this week is irrelevant when it comes to injuries? Is it irrelevant? If I'm playing the Patriots this week, is it the same as playing the Chiefs? Really, it's a better question put the opposite way.
I would say yes. I don't know that teams do it that way, but I would want my team to do it that way.
There's also how much is left to be new when it comes to Buffalo versus Kansas City, you know? What you'd want to do in a vacuum, what you'd want to do with a team that you'd expect there to be a pretty good chance you will see in the postseason is try to set them up, you know, show them a look and then do something different out of it next time, to put it very simply, generally. Just kind of have that mindset is we're not giving you our very best punches here in this game, because the coaching is so good, that there's so much history, that how well can, what does that do for it? You know, maybe you just, again, this is one where a lot of people wouldn't look at it the same way. What do you mean? I don't want to try to win this game. I'm not saying that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what a coach wants to do is use the regular season meeting, use all of the regular season material in ways that can give you edges in the postseason. If you're a team that has great odds to make it, as is the case with both of these teams and always is, has been for years, right? I mean, I know last year's Bills season wasn't a lock or anything, but this one pretty much is. So do I want to kind of be coy here? How that manifests, we won't even know after this game, right? What did they do to set up a playoff meeting? Who knows? We can't tell you at that point. But it's just more of a general point that, it's back to the question of how high are the stakes here? And it's a little bit depressing to think that maybe they're not as high as it looks kind of on the surface.
Yeah. It really, I think to fully, answer the question definitively, I mean, it's really just opinion based, but what we don't know is how real they think it is, right? Like, do they think they can get the one seed against a team that's already currently undefeated?
I think yes.
I would think so, right? Because anything can happen. So I think you want to lean into that. I think you owe it to yourself and the players, but I think you just can't put anyone at risk. Like, if anyone's close, I would err on the side of caution. And I know, look, it's easier to do that if you're playing New England or Indianapolis and not the Chiefs. But I don't think in week 11 that I want to be pushing that hard. If someone is close, I want to err on the side of caution.
What's really counterintuitive is the idea, all right, so the one seed is the goal, and it's not at all out of reach, I mean, to say the least. If the Bills win Sunday, they'll win on ties if it's just they in Kansas City, and you know, you have two losses, they have one. There's just a lot of golf left. So that's the thing that's eluded the Bills, right? All offseason, our conversations, what's out there for them to achieve in the regular season? Win the division again. But the one seed, we haven't had that advantage yet. So I got to think they're going to push hard for it. That's where I come down ultimately, just trying to thinking out loud. Like, I think this is like that opportunity for the Bills. If they lose, they're down three games plus the tiebreaker. Like, almost forget it.
Mm-hmm.
But what's counterintuitive is that if that happens, then you get the luxury of really negotiating the rest of the season, probably.
Depending on what's going on behind you and how you handle the aftermath of that loss, there is a scenario where I don't really want to put it this way, because I like the idea of pushing for the one. I've been focused on it since the Bills started hot this year, and I wasn't thinking I'd be thinking about it at all. But there is a scenario where you could get me to admit that the Chiefs are doing you a favor if they beat you on Sunday. Like, that was probably going to be really tough. And this might allow us to just sort of go to more of a load management type of mentality for the last month and a half of the season.
Whereas Kansas City is going to try to go undefeated.
Right.
And maybe not enjoy the luxury quite like they have not last year. Last year they were pressed and they won anyway.
Yeah.
But that tremendous advantage you get as the one, you know, I think by winning, you... They would be pushed, right? Maybe the fact that they're undefeated means that they're getting pushed anyway, trying to make history in that way, as opposed to what you might get as a runaway AFC East champion, but you're not getting the one seed. You know what? We've got all week, And I think for the last 5 minutes, I've sounded like they're better off losing, and I do not think that.
Right. Because even
my judgment is they are not better off losing.
Even if the one ends up eluding them, getting another win here, just keep going, keep stacking these up, because you could afford yourself at some point here. If people keep losing behind you here, you know, then the opportunity to even not have to go hard to clinch the two could exist for you. And that could be really good for the Bills. That would allow them, if that were to happen, at least for, like, say, week 18, for them to just have their own bye and then, of course, have to play, you know, the full complement of playoff games. But still, you would be afforded the opportunity to not have to lean into your last game, or even maybe more than that. Who knows? We'll see how it all stacks up behind them. You know, Baltimore is what, only a game back, I think. They've got three losses still.
Yeah.
So, like, they're right on your heels, really. You know, I'm thinking about Houston losing last night and getting a fourth loss and feeling like they're probably, you know, I'm not as worried about them being a threat. So, you know, you could be in a position where the two versus the three, I'm not that worried about either one. Again, that's in a scenario where you're treating losing this game as not the worst thing ever.
Good point from a listener named Jeremy on Twitter. I'm okay with guys sitting out for their health, but it does something to Allen. And I wonder what your thoughts on yesterday's game are in terms of Allen, where he gets 30 points, although there was defensive touchdown.
Right.
But he had a couple interceptions, no touchdown passes. What particular added strain is there on him without his top weapons? That's a fair point.
I do think it's considerable. I mean, I think, you know, they got there yesterday. He got to 280 yards. He made some plays. But I think it looked – we've only had like six quarters of feeling like, okay, this passing offense is, you know, this looks like what I hoped it would be when Cooper got here. And they're kind of right back to, you know, Matt Collins had a nice game and he came through. But am I counting on that to beat the Chiefs this week or even, beat a good team in the playoffs? I mean,
doesn't Collins deserve a little bit of credit?
He does, but I don't think there's half the league. You know, any contending team you were playing yesterday probably beats you. I mean, Flacco was a disaster. And, you know, the Bills eventually got very comfortable in this game. And really, it was, you know, their game from halftime on. Really.
That's what makes that point tough for me.
But I just didn't like how they're up. You know, I felt like Allen was kind of stuck a lot in this game.
It's another game where I don't know how much of a conversation it is, but they owe a lot of gratitude to their opponent.
Yes.
Not just because of whatever you want to say about their talent, but or their execution, but it is criminal to have Anthony Richardson on the bench when they're in third and one and fourth and one. And there were two key series in the second half where you've got Joe Flacco, absolutely no threat with his legs at all. Can you not appreciate from watching Josh Allen play the massive difference in teams, think of it in terms of the defense or just the offense, what your chances of success are on short yardage plays, fourth down especially, because on third, you could even get, you know, I don't want to say cute, but a little creative. How about creative? But with Flacco, what are you doing? I mean, you're hoping somebody beats their man on the Oliver play. That just doesn't happen. He gets sacked. Who gets just? And you have the biggest athletic freak of a quarterback of all time, including Allen, on your sideline, and you can't be brought to using him in those situations?
Well, thank God.
I mean, the politics just suffocate these teams sometimes, and that's just another level of controversy. I love that Flacco was getting booed like right away in this game, because fans know. For all the announcers, it will tell you the whole adage about, you know, if you agree with the fans, you're going to sit with them. Very often the fans have a better grasp on the team situation than the team looks to have. Many years in the drought, when the Bills are going nowhere, and we all knew it, But, you know, they're trying to build momentum or some nonsense for the following season. How did that go? They got their momentum when they got Josh Allen on the roster. So here are the Colts. What are they going to do with Richardson? What do we care? But what a break for anybody they're playing in those situations to just not use him. Just that's absolutely criminal. He didn't have to start. He wasn't playing well. I get the argument for benching him. I think it's, you know, wrong for their organization, but I get it. They're trying to win. They're 4-4. Now they've lost two more.
Right.
And they're already right today with Flacco's going to start this week. Hip hip hooray. You just got to make something. It was a Justin Fields point 2 years ago. You know, just try to win, though. If your point is to win, how does he not get used on those plays? What are the Bills supposed to do about Anthony Richardson on 3rd-and-1, 4th-and-1?
Yeah, I think it's a very good point. They're too proud to replace
That's
Flacco.
Right. They just That's right. They don't.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
They don't want the specter of, you know, oh, I've got two guys now. What are we doing here? But, yeah, I mean, that was a huge sequence. I mean, the Bills did a great job. I think it was Johnson and Bernard on the third down play that tackled the receiver a couple of yards or a yard short. And then, yeah, the fourth down play is Quentin Jefferson. Go figure. He just shows up and he gets a fourth down sack. That was tremendous. Just tremendous. So, yeah, I mean, Richardson's a whole different thing. In that spot, like they don't even like Flacco. They won't even try sneaks with Flacco.
That's right. Even that.
And how money are the Bills on sneaks? They did get stuffed on one, but then got it on the fourth down anyway.
You can do anything you want, almost with just. Is it with or without impunity? I wanted to say
with
but I'm,
impunity.
I'm not sure anymore.
With impunity,
you can do almost anything you want in those plays if you have Allen, Hurts, Jackson and Henry. Almost anything you want. And you're the Colts with, you know, you can almost say one of those guys.
Some version of that, sure.
And Taylor. How much easier is Taylor's life if Richardson is a running threat on those plays? Not even close. I mean, that's just absolutely criminal. Not our problem. Bills at 8-2. Kansas City this week, 9-0. What are you thinking about? Got injury updates. Eric Wood at 5 today. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, here at 803-0550. Football Monday on WGR.
Yeah, I mean, again, guys stepping up, knowing their job, knowing their assignment, and going out there and executing. Can be cleaner, that's me. So, again, just making sure we're communicating well, and, again, just trying to hold on to football, and, you know, we got to play better on offense.
Josh Allen yesterday in Indianapolis, 30-20 the final. Keon Coleman already ruled out for this game. Dalton Kincaid, don't know yet. Amari Cooper, we'll see. It's adding up. To lose Kincaid potentially now.
Yeah.
And, you know, in terms of Coleman, they have the bye here in the middle of this stretch, next week to be specific. So with these guys that get ruled out so early, you might start to wonder about injured reserve. But, like, there's a free week in there.
Right, and the injured reserve counts games, not weeks.
Right.
So, effectively, if you would put Coleman on IR before this game, he'd be out 5 weeks. One of them would be the bye. So, but you don't get credit for the time served for the bye. It's games. So,
he would get credit for yesterday, though, if they were to do it eventually. The game, yesterday's game would count as one of the four.
Oh, they can retroactive that in the NFL?
Yes.
I didn't think they could. I think there's such an importance on doing it right away if you think a guy's going to miss that many games.
No, I think so. I think it would count. Okay. I guess we should find out for sure, but I think it would count. It's just that, you know, with Taron Johnson, earlier in the season, you wondered, well, are they going to use IR? And they didn't, right? With
right.
Johnson, even though he might have missed four games, it was touch and go.
Yeah.
So they decided to, I guess, quote, risk it. And they might have been better off in retrospect doing that. Yep. You know, it's not like it's costing them their season. Anyway, it just could be, if you, everybody's wondering about the Bills, you know, like what was the prognosis for Coleman? The way McDermott talked last week made it no surprise that he would miss yesterday. And then he's already ruled out for this one. Then you have the bye. Who knows, but.
I think the bye is why they're not IRing him. This is a guess. I mean, it's just a convenient spot for it to land, and I think it gives you the flexibility to, you know, feel like, you know, I can get this guy back in 3 weeks and, you know, not have to worry about the IR thing.
Cooper's status, though, being more in the day-to-day realm, complicates that. Because if McDermott thought he would have Cooper yesterday, didn't it sound like that in the morning? When you got up and looked at all your rosters, you saw Amari Cooper on like 10 of your teams. I was sort of feeling like he would play yesterday. It didn't sound too,
yeah.
But I missed the last few days of work.
Yeah, Friday he talked to the media. Cooper did on, I think it was Friday, Thursday or Friday, it was one of the 2 days I was sitting in here, and it came across my screen. And I mean, he had a brace / cast on. And the way he was now I know he's a pretty low-key guy to begin with, so it's hard to really read too much into his body language or just how he's phrasing things. Sunday morning, I was not hopeful at all.
Okay. Well, I'm just saying, if you have sort of a quandary when it comes to Coleman and IR, you think you're getting Cooper back, fine. But if you are wrong, then you'd have that much more reason to want to call somebody up to fill the spot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what that's the benefit of using injured reserve, is you can, you know, without having to dilly-dally around with the practice squad, you just call somebody up or sign somebody
right.
and go forward. 803-0550, Eric Wood at 5 today. We had the Sabres this afternoon, so we got started late on this football Monday. I mean, the nerve of a hockey game stepping in on football Monday. But, you know, it was eventful.
Yep. It was the only Veterans Day matinee in the league. I thought, I never really looked at the schedule, but I knew the Sabres were obviously playing at 12:30, and I thought this is probably one of these deals where there's games every half hour or something all day. But no, everything else is at night. But Sabres and Canadiens played early.
I like it for the Sabres.
Yeah.
On a school holiday?
I did too, yeah. And it looked like they had, like, the areas that show up on TV when they're empty looked like they were full. So I think, you know, and Saturday was a pretty good crowd in there, too. I was in there on Saturday.
If I were the Sabres, I'd much rather have, if it were to be played on this date, have it be a day game. Although I'd rather win.
Yeah, I'd rather not go.
That would have been better.
Seven.
Mike is with us. Hello, Mike.
Although one of them was an empty netter.
Hey, whatever. How are you guys?
Good, Mike.
Hey, just calling to see, I know we've got obviously a big game against the Chiefs, but trying to figure out the one seed obviously is up for grabs here. So with all the injuries, I'm just trying to figure out, Amari Cooper's got a wrist injury. Obviously, it's not a lower leg. It's not a knee or any of that stuff. Is it worth just putting him out there, even if he gets, you know, five targets, but just to have his body out there against the Chiefs? It really feels like a must-win game. Just want to hear your thoughts.
I think if he is going to do that, he's got to be able to catch the ball. And if he's out there and they're not throwing it to him at all, I mean, on one hand, if you're the Chiefs, you could think, well, that's just the, you know, it's the progressions and it led us to this. I just have a feeling they would suspect he's not ready to catch the ball. Like, so I don't know, decoy stuff. I need guys who can actually do the job, is where I would come down on that. And I think the problem with whatever is troubling him, wrist, hand, whatever it is, he has not caught live balls from Josh Allen yet. It's only been like light toss. And so I don't know, man, like that feels to me like a thing that if he goes too early, he could be done. And I don't want to risk that. So I want him to be careful and I want them to be careful. So I'm not a fan of decoy stuff really at all with that player specifically.
I mean, why did you get him? They were 4-2, not all set with a record of 4-2, but everything this team, every move this team makes is about the playoffs. You don't make this trade unless it's not for the playoffs. You want to get in, but their odds were great of getting it. They're 4-0 since they traded for him. He has 5 catches.
I think that's right. Yeah.
Like, I don't hate the logic of, you know, I kind of do roll my eyes at this sort of thing often, but this is one where if we get to Sunday afternoon and maybe you'll give me at least largely like last week where we really don't know what we've got or nobody else does. The Chiefs don't. And he's on the field and there's some reason to think like he's not to be taken seriously on the field, which is the caller's point. It's based on the assumption that he can't catch the ball yet, which nobody would really know or be able to have. The Chiefs, again.
The Chiefs wouldn't know that. The Bills would know that.
So what, are they not going to cover him? They're not going to not cover him because they think he's not to be taken seriously as a receiver. I mean, probably. This could be one where you're trying to get some intel, and the Bills would probably want to drag it out all week, no matter what, if they think. He's also somebody, if it's like it's not getting better, then you could talk about injured reserve for him.
Yeah, it would really surprise me if this didn't go to whatever time the inactives are announced on Sunday. So, right 3 o'clock-ish, right 90 minutes before kickoff. Because I think the possibility that he could play would matter to the Bills and to the Chiefs. I think he's that good a player. So I'm willing to watch them play all the games they want with it. I just don't. If he can't do what needs to be done to play the position effectively, I don't want him out there. I just think there's a risk. I feel like that could potentially damage that thing further. I just don't want to take the chance. So, he's going to be engaged if he's out there in running routes and blocking and Lord knows what else. If he can't catch the ball, he's not playing. That's it. For me, anyway. And I'd be stunned if the Bills didn't handle it the same way.
It's just kind of incredible that they're 8-2 through all this. And they go into this game without Coleman, maybe without Cooper again, maybe without Kincaid. And they're favored against an undefeated team. I mean, we've had a lot of these over the years, but it's just another one where, they're a 2.5-point favorite as of an hour ago when I looked. Despite how, like, the world's most important thing, getting weapons for Josh Allen, is in this state. Curtis Samuel was active early in this game. I thought that was kind of exciting.
I thought for a minute, if we get one play down the field from him, we've got the Curtis Samuel game. it seemed like with everybody out, like they were, he seemed like to be somewhat of a focus there. But I needed like one play down the field. It would have been like, oh, wow, look at that. Curtis Samuel game.
Alas.
Right. Didn't get it.
4 for 35. A lot of that early. But, depending on the health of these key players, Sunday rolls around and you've got Mac Hollins, who's going to play anyway. That's never changed. No matter with Amari Cooper or with Keon Coleman or with Kincaid, that's never changed. So Mac Hollins on the field. Shakir in the slot. No Kincaid would mean maybe more of that, although Shakir is still playing a lot and giving you the same thing every week. 6 for 58 yesterday is like right in line with what he always does. Never scores a touchdown. 6 for 58. And then you would have Samuel, I suppose, on the other side, and they'll be favored against 9-0 Kansas City. It's just not a problem yet, all this stuff. It's still there.
No, they're in a position here where they should be focused on getting healthy. As much as I want this game and I want the race for the one seed, I think they have to be focused on the big picture enough. And I'm not saying this because I doubt that they are. I'd be stunned if they're not. I think they'll be very careful. They have the cushion, and yes, the one seed is something you've never had, and there is great benefit to getting that week off. So, of course, go for it, but not, not to risk anyone. So Kincaid, how did Kincaid say it after the game? He tried to come back and didn't feel like he could protect himself, was the phrasing he used. I'd feel like Cooper's in the same boat. And if that's the swing thought a guy has, they're not going on the field.
And Kincaid is a knee, which...
Yeah, I think he banged it on the miss.
Me too. Like, there was what it looks like.
That long miss that, boy, that was...
That was a tough throw.
That was.
Like, nobody's around him.
Right, just come on.
Even worse if it gets the guy hurt.
Right.
Would feel worse.
Doubly worse, yeah, because that ball's on target. He's not hurt, and it's a walk-in touchdown, probably.
Eric Wood coming up at 5 today. Football Monday continues next. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR. I realized this weekend that I need to have this job and be at it to do well in fantasy football.
You missed some stuff, maybe?
I took my birthday weekend off. My wife and I spent a day in Niagara on the Lake, you know, kids' sports, hockey and lacrosse, and then I was off yesterday, so it's a different day. And yes, we had a game in Germany, which is great. Everybody's excited about that. Mm-hmm. We had Nico Collins' status unclear, Tyreek Hill status unclear, and in a lot of leagues I play in, waivers is closed past 10 a.m. Sunday. I can't go replace Tyreek Hill tonight unless I did it already. I can make the lineup change, mm-hmm. but I can't make the roster change.
Yeah.
And just too heavy of a lift.
So you got stuck on Collins? Because we talked, Nate was in Thursday and Friday for you, which was, you know, it's always a pleasure for me to have him in here. And we talked a little bit about Collins, and it was, you know, obviously Friday was his, they, you know, opened his window and activated him kind of all at once. But he did not practice until Friday. And I was like, there's no way coming off a hamstring injury that they're putting that guy on the field.
Well, the optimism on him was always there, though. Like, you had reports in the last couple of weeks that he's on track to be back after the minimum time. And then yesterday morning, I was able to follow the talk yesterday morning, and I think it might have been Schefter. Apologies if it wasn't. It might have been more than one reporter. It was... Lindsay Theory, I think is her name. She was on site for ESPN at Houston, and she made a reference to what the Rams did with Puka the week before.
Right.
Where, like, that was just out of nowhere, and he played, and he had a huge game. And so the media was kind of leaning you toward, he's actually okay. It's still a mistake. You got to have a backup plan. I didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't have one in all situations. And just, there were other injury... What was the Bills? Specter. When did that happen? Like, there were other injury updates Thursday, Friday, and I was just nowhere near paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I got burned in a couple of spots.
Yeah, well.
But that happens. Doesn't that happen to you? No matter what? I'm not talking about fantasy. But just like,
oh, God,
you take two or three days off, and you come in, and there's something you didn't know happened.
Dude, yeah. Yeah, you know, for sure. Yeah.
Even though your phone works the same.
Yeah. Yeah, that I the most recent version of this was the quote from Kyle Oposo that made the rounds in the spring about how we knew in October we didn't have it last year. And I missed that, and I think it was because I was off on a Friday in the spring to go to the Adirondacks with my wife and some friends. So sort of like you. I took just an extra day off to pad the weekend, and I think I took that Monday off too, just like, you know, nice long weekend. And somewhere in there is when that story circulated, and I missed it and didn't know what ever happened until months later. And I'm like, whoa, okay, hello.
Well, you know what they say. Family time can be a problem.
Get your priorities straight.
You know what they say.
Right.
Overrated. Eric Wood after the break and the update, Buffalo Bills Football Monday on WGR. Welcome back, Football Monday. Just thinking about, from watching the game yesterday on TV, the crowd, how it was another seemingly impressive showing by the Bills fans on the road against kind of a, you know, what are the Colts as a fan base? Normal? Maybe even less?
Yeah.
Just sort of there?
Yeah.
Not renowned for
sure
how well they travel. I saw three games like that yesterday. The Pittsburgh-Washington really sounded like the Steelers.
Yeah.
And then Detroit-Houston. Last night, with all the interceptions, really sounded like the Lions you know, I guess throw Montreal, Buffalo in there this afternoon.
There were a lot of Calgary fans in the building Saturday, too, I'll tell you.
If not for the horn, you wouldn't know which team scored, sadly.
Right.
Eric Wood on the West Hur Hotline. Eric, you were there. What was this game for how well-represented Bills fans were?
It was strong again, and it's becoming a consistent theme now. But, yeah, it was strong. I would say there's other spots that it was probably a bigger crowd this year, but it was another week where, you know, Colts players or media had mentioned that, okay, this is a pretty big takeover by the Bills Mafia again. Like, all the reports of the Seattle game and Geno Smith saying it felt like a road game at times in there. Okay, I'm buying it. Pat McAfee said at one point he was trying to quiet down the fans himself, and then realized, oh, it's not the Colts fans cheering for the Colts offense. It's the Bills trying to make it difficult on them to snap the football. And so it's awesome. Sean McDermott mentions it each time they play a road game, and you know he'll mention the fact that it's not lost on them when the crowd's there. And I'll tell you what, when you run out for pregame warmups and you're in a away stadium and you hear a cheer – because of how many Bills fans are going to attend, it's a good feeling as a player.
Is it different than in your playing days? Has the success of the team meant for a greater amount of this? Because, I mean, I grew up a Bills fan in the 80s, and there were great teams at the end of that run, and they were already then, I think, famous for... I mean, it's easier to get around now, maybe, but...
And tickets are more attainable, I think.
Yeah, that's big, right?
Right, yeah. Secondary market, that kind of thing.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, we played a game at Carolina my rookie year, and I couldn't believe how many Bills fans were there. And I understand there's a big, like, Carolinas, Buffalo contingent that's mm-hmm. been a popular spot for people from Buffalo or Western New York to move over the years. So, you know, maybe some of them live there or bring people in town. That was the first time in my career that I thought to myself, wow, there is a massive amount of Bills fans here. My final game was in Jacksonville in the playoff game. And Bills fans tried to buy up half the stadium for that one. And so it was definitely there while I was playing. I would say it's become more consistent now. I mean, the popularity of this team nationally has just grown tremendously too. And just, you know, we walk around airports or walk around amusement parks and you see random Bills gear all over the country. And I don't feel like I saw as much of that when I was playing. But I guess I wasn't in as many airports traveling each week like I do now.
right. Traveling on the charters, a different lifestyle, I suppose.
Exactly.
Yeah. I was in Europe in the summer, and I wore a white Bills hat with a standing blue buffalo on it extensively on this trip. And I very badly wanted just one Go Bills out of someone on the street in Barcelona, and I never got it. And I mentioned it to a flight attendant on the way back. And because he mentioned the hat, recognized it, and said, Buffalo. I said, yeah, we're flying to Toronto. We live in Buffalo. I said, I wore this damn hat for 10 days around Spain, and I never got one acknowledgement. He said, they all thought it was just a bull.
Or they, you don't know Go Bills in Spanish.
Right. Maybe that's it.
That's good. I like that story.
All right, Eric. Well, let's put yesterday's game to bed, as I often ask you, what is the most memorable thing about it? I mean, Taron Johnson right away. And, you know, you're never – well, that's not true. The Colts
did
take
fall
the lead.
Behind, yeah.
I'm wrong about that. Yesterday's highlight or two for you?
Yeah, I would say the pick six from Taron Johnson on their first play of the game. That's just a remarkable play. I was watching from upstairs in the booth and assumed they were in man-to-man coverage by their defensive lineman. I'm not sure if Joe Flacco was fooled or not, but I was just based upon – kind of just the alignment of the defense. I assumed it was man, and you know, I'm like, oh, that's interesting. The Bills are in man the first play of the game. They run primarily zone, and then Taron drops back into that like little. I'm assuming when they shifted to zone, they thought it was cover three. And Taron said after the game they were going to pick on, you know, that spot that Miami hit, and so then he gets the interception and takes it to the house. That was certainly a highlight. It was a roller coaster ride of a game. I mean, just. There was a lot of turn. You know, Bills had two turnovers. They had four. There was multiple. The Bills had a turnover on downs. They had a couple. I mean, it was just – there was a lot of kind of back and forth, a lot of excitement in the game. And then beyond that, I mean, I guess maybe the two plays to Mac Hollins. Those were kind of the heroic Josh Allen scrambling out of the pocket, bigger plays down the field. But to me, it wasn't the Bills' sharpest performance on offense. They scored 23 on offense, 30 in the game, get over 30 points for the fourth straight game, which is remarkable. And, you know, it's just, to me, the Colts, they played all one, you know, their record was 4-5 heading into the game. It's a team still very much so in the mix, the way the AFC is shaping out. They have quality guys on both sides of the ball. Bills didn't necessarily have their best off offensively and, you know, should have won that game by 17 points. So, you know, this is a, it's a good feeling when you can play a quality team. I'm not going to sit here and say they're one of the top teams in the AFC, but, you know, it is what it is. They've played teams tough this year. And when the Bills didn't necessarily have it, they turned the ball over twice. Josh doesn't throw a touchdown. You're out Cooper. You're out Coleman. Kincaid goes out of the game. They still find a way to run away with it at the end.
Yeah, we've been, you know, we're easing into the Sabres season here, you know, just a little more than a month old here. And A game, B game, like finding a way to win when you're not your best has been kind of a topic of conversation amongst the hockey team here. And I felt like I was thinking about that yesterday watching this Bills win. Because I also didn't think they had their best stuff, but their B game was good enough.
Right, and I'll give you one more. I mean, you go into the half and you gave up 107 yards.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
To Jonathan Taylor, that's your concern. Are they just going to pound the ball? Is this going to look like the game from 2021 where Jonathan Taylor runs wild and instead they hold him to 7 yards on five carries in the second half? 50% of his yards came on the one run in the game. And then I do this every week because I look at all the advanced stats and all that. And then, you know, you could take stats and do whatever you want with them, but he only averaged 2.8 yards per carry the whole rest of the game. So, you know, especially in the second half, they did a great job making adjustments. And that's been a theme this year. I mean, they've crushed teams in the third quarter in the second half of games. And I saw it earlier. They outscored their opponents 79-23 in the third quarter of games this year. And so whether that's just in-game adjustments, I said, you know, the Bills make great halftime adjustments. And someone brought up a point to me, and this is fair, on Twitter that, you know, there's not that much time at halftime. Isn't it more in-game adjustments? And I said, that's fair, because every time we go to the sideline, you're constantly working on and working through the previous series and what do we need to do better. So, you know, I give the Bills coaching staff a lot of credit that throughout this season, they've been able to adjust in games and play a really strong second half.
One observation I had from a play in this game that was a significant play, the Austin Johnson interception, Eric, was a lot of things came together there, but like watching it back today, man, I don't know how you felt watching it live, because I was reminded watching the replays today that when that play was happening live, I was terrified. I mean, you only had a moment to think about it, but it looked like that was there. And if Flacco puts that ball on Taylor, there, it's probably a touchdown, but Miller gets in Flacco's face. It's like the margins are just so slim, and I'm sure you can do this every game, but this play just jumped out at me as a play that swung completely the other way, because I think that's 7 points if Miller doesn't rush Flacco into that throw that ends up right at Austin Johnson. I mean, it's not really a question. It's more just an observation, like how slim the difference between a game-changing touchdown for them and a touchdown-saving interception by a lineman can end up being.
Oh, you're exactly right. I mean, as an offensive player, when we call a screen, we are begging for you to blitz. mean, please send a blitz. Get as many guys as you can on our side of the line of scrimmage because we're going to dump it right over your head. Now we have a convoy of blockers, and we're out the gate. And so that was set up. That's twice this year that Austin Johnson has been the one to sniff out the screen. And so give him credit. I mean, he made two interceptions. Those are game-changing plays when those happen. But like you said, it's everyone working in unison. It's guys flying around all over the place that allows, you know, it allows Austin Johnson to get that pick. And I thought Von Miller had some pretty good spark in his step yesterday and doesn't get a sack in the game, but there was multiple times where he affected Flacco in the pocket and then drew a false start. And then on one play, I thought Von Miller false started. I know you guys don't listen to the broadcast, but
hey.
I thought Von Miller – I got to throw
encroached.
That in like once a month.
Yeah.
Once a month. But I thought Von Miller jumped off sides because, you know, he gets that lean going right before the snap. Well, it looked like a false start because of how much distance was between him and the right tackle, Braden Smith. Well, that's because Braden Smith, because he was getting smoked, was cheating back in the backfield so far that they threw a flag on him. And so, you know, I think that's a good sign that it looks like coming off the suspension and coming off of last season that he's a guy that you can rely on to create some pressure in a game.
If you can figure out a way so that I can watch the game in the studio with the sound down and you up, but not be three plays ahead, I'm down. Like, I would do that.
Yeah, right. Same.
But
my wife does it, and what my wife does is she pauses the game, and then she will kind of sync it up with the broadcast.
Yeah, you're just too far ahead for me. I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to pause radio. Eric Wood on the West Shore Hotline. I have to cram this in. Please don't let me go on about this, but what a gift for anybody the Colts play that they don't use Richardson on the short yardage plays. I mean, just think of the difference. And what the real crime of it is, Eric, the whole premise with Flacco is, hey, we got 53 grown men in here. We got to try to win. I'm sorry. Yes, you were the fourth overall pick. We got to try to win games. And then you obviously, egregiously do a thing that costs you better chances of winning games by having a quarterback who will not sneak, he will not move. There is no threat of that at all. Where you have a guy on the sideline, the greatest physical freak ever at the position to come into the league. You know, how do you justify that?
Yeah, and to your point, it was either Chris or Sal in the pregame on the roundtable on WGR said that Jonathan Taylor's rushing yards are lower when Flacco starts. And a part of it is you don't have to account for Richardson. And in talking with Jason McCourty, he'll be my guest on the Saturday Night Buffalo podcast this week. I was talking with him today, and he said from the production meetings, a lot of what they heard was, yes, the play where he took himself out of the game, obviously a sign of some immaturity at the position and whatnot, but it's not just that. It's a lot of off-the-field maturity stuff where, you know, what got him to the NFL, he's going to have to put in a lot more work at this level. And they're just not getting it from him, and that's part of the reason that we're seeing Flacco. And it's not simply just – it is that he gives them the best chance to win in Flacco, but a lot of it is Richardson's not earning the – so that's concerning. Now, this is a guy that played 13 games in college. He went 7-6, and you made him the number 4 overall draft pick. That's a risk you take. And so – you know, obviously he's got a lot of time ahead of him. It's only year two for him, but the writing on the wall doesn't look great right now.
Right.
Eric, are all games, all opponents, all weeks created equal? I ask because the Bills have got obviously big injury concerns, especially at pass catcher. Kincaid from yesterday, Cooper and Coleman don't play in this game. McDermott has already ruled Coleman out. Sounds like we'll see about Cooper. We'll see about Kincaid. And it's the Chiefs coming in at 9-0, and you're at 8-2, and the one seed is still out there and all of that. If you're playing New England this week versus Kansas City, is it any different, or would you – because I want to be very careful with these guys, big picture in mind. I want the one seed. I'd love to take the Chiefs down, but I don't want to rush anybody out there that's in danger of further injuring themselves.
No, I'm with you. And no, not all games are created equal. You know, and the Bills are going to feel a big win. After practice, there's going to be a ton of national media around as opposed to last week when you're playing the Colts. Now, this Bills team is used to all that national media attention through as many playoff games and big games and primetime games as they've played, but this one's going to be big. It's what everyone's going to be talking about all week, and the guys know that comes to playing games at Highmark Stadium in the playoffs, this game is going to play potentially a major factor. But Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott, just like how whether it's free agency or trades or whatnot, they're not willing to mortgage the future for the short term. I'd assume they'll take the same approach with these injuries and say, look, we're not just going to put a guy out there and further risk him being out for possibly extended periods of time further than what it would normally be or what it should be just to get them back for this game. And so, you know, it may turn into a different game plan because of that. And similar to how last week you saw different guys have to step up and, you know, maybe different schemes or pass route trees based upon who's available. But, you know, they're gonna have to make it work. And when you got 17 back there, I'd say you always have a chance.
It's probably the biggest game of the season in the NFL. It's become an incredible rivalry. The Bills have their wins, but only in the regular season. We know all of this already. How do you compare the two teams psychologically here? With the stakes being what they are, the Chiefs being undefeated, maybe for them, but it's a possible greater, for what, however it manifests, a greater incentive to try to keep that going, I would think. And the Bills with, you know, revenge in their hearts after last year. I mean, do the two teams go into this game on kind of the same emotional plane or maybe not?
I would say similar. I mean, both teams understand that the one seed ramifications of this game are there. Everybody wants that bye. You want home field advantage through the playoffs. You know, Kansas City to me almost seems like some of those Brady years where you're like, gosh, on paper, this roster it doesn't seem like it should be this kind of record, but they find a way to win at the end, and they just seem so confident at the end of games. I mean, yesterday you block a field goal to win it. There's some luck involved there, and there's been some luck with penalties or whatnot at the end of games, but regardless, even if a couple of those flip, they're still a one- or two-loss team, and it just seems like how does this happen each and every week with this team? Part of it's the fact that they have a really good defense that keeps them in games, because their defense plays at such a high level to where if their offense is sputtering, like it did last week, only putting up 16 points against Denver, you still get a win. And so, you know, the emotion for both sides, I mean, both teams are going to be up for it. I mean, this is almost like a division game at this point because you're playing them twice a year, and it's a lot, you know, when you have two good teams, there's going to be a lot of the same players that get retained each and every season because you want to keep this great roster together. And so a lot of familiarity between coaches and schemes, players going against each other. I'm sure it'll be a chippy, emotional game kind of both ways in this.
How about the idea here, Eric? Here's a hard one to end with. The idea with the Chiefs, and I suppose this has been said or can be said about the Bills, but especially quintessentially this Chiefs season so far, the idea of knowing how to win. Is that something you would sort of, from having had your experience as a player, like, is that a real thing? I tend to make fun of it. I'm not sure that would surprise you, because then I think you have to forget how to win when it stops. The randomness of close games. I think, you know, Mahomes is great, obviously, so there's an edge in having great players, but I think they're just really, you know, running super lucky.
There's been some games this year that it feels like they've ran lucky. Now, you know, you look back at the Super Bowl last year, and the whole time you're thinking, you know, if Kansas City gets the ball and Patrick Mahomes is in, you know, four down territory throughout, they're going to keep getting first downs and likely score. You know, do they? To me, I think a lot of it's on the quarterback being able to be super composed, not make mistakes at the end of the game, putting them in positions to make plays over and over. You got a experienced play caller and Andy Reid, who's been great for a long time. And so, you know, whether it's knowing how to win games or you have experience in those situations so you know how to handle them and you're not overwhelmed by the situation, to me they just look calm at the end of games to where mm-hmm. I said this to Tom Brady before the Seahawks-Bills game. I said, I hope this isn't offensive to you, but to me right now, Patrick Mahomes looks like Tom Brady at the end of games, where it's like, hey, as long as it's one score, we're fine. Like, we would jump up 14-3 on New England over and over, just waiting for them to panic, and it never happened. So to me, it's got that feel to it now where it seems like Mahomes is just calm and in control, almost in a cocky way, but he's earned the right to look like that at the end of games because he's proven it over and over.
Right. I did see a breakdown of their field goal block plays from the game. And I think Dan Orlovsky at ESPN had a thread of this going, or just one reel. He was talking, I think, on one of their platforms on TV, and there's just this breakdown of the player who made the block and like what he did and didn't do on the previous attempts. And you know, I you still got to make the play, and there's got to be some luck in there somewhere, but there also was, I think, maybe a lot of intent on what they were, like, saved this opportunity for when it really mattered.
And you know what? Like, and the Bills are kind of at this point, too, when you've had the same staff for so long, you could get into those kind of details. You know, when you have a new staff, do you have the time to say, hey, we're going to mix up different field goal blocks to try and trick a guy in case it comes down to a field goal then? And I didn't watch that breakdown. I'm actually going to look at it when I'm done here, but because I'm interested to see it. But I'm assuming it was, okay, we're avoiding a guy. We're, you know, moving out there. And then all of a sudden at the end, they completely blow up. It was, I guess, the left end on the field goal protection unit, and they run over him to get the block. And I'm assuming they were messing with him earlier, kind of deking out, you know, going one way or the other. So that he felt like on that one, okay, now they're going to move. Now they don't, and they flat back him, and they get the block.
Bills up 2 Sunday, 3 seconds left, Butker lining up from 40. Do I use my best field goal block move, or do I save it for January?
No, you use it, and then you come up with something different the next time.
Okay.
I don't know that Greg Rousseau can pull the Myles Garrett, but to me, I always feel like, nowadays, the easiest way to block one is if you got a guy athletic enough to jump the line. Now, if you land on somebody, it's a penalty and extends the drive. So you want to save it for a crucial moment. But when Myles Garrett jumps that line of scrimmage at 290 pounds, it seems like, well, why don't more people do that?
Good question. Yeah. Eric, thanks. Enjoy your week.
Yep, absolutely. You guys too.
All right, that's our dude Eric Wood on the Western Hotline, and his appearance weekly here on WGR is brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com, and by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop at northtownkia.com.
That situation, and this is not nothing, is when you try anything and risk the penalty, because if you get a penalty and you block the kick or they miss the kick, I mean, it's pretty bad if that happens, but if you do, they're still going to kick on the next play.
Right.
The penalty would hurt you worse in different, almost any
different time left,
down
right.
and distance situations, clock situations, right. But last play of the game, try anything you can think of. 803-0550, Buffalo Bills Football Monday. We'll look for your calls again after the update. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.
We're going to take it one week at a time here. We'll see how this week goes. And, you know, really where we're at is, you know, it's been a while since he's played football here. And he's done a phenomenal job along with our trainers of getting back to now where he can get back out there. And really just take it one day and one week at a time. And those guys are going to reassess towards the end of the week and see where he's at and then what the next week may hold for him.
Sean McDermott on Matt Milano today. I mean, it's been, what, 8 years? There's got to be. Every TV station and radio station in town must have canned audio of McDermott saying that about somebody. You never hear Milano's name. Maybe even about Milano. There might have been a year where he said the exact same things about him then.
Right.
We don't really need to keep asking, do we? You think it wasn't going to be a day at a time or a week at a time? What was it going to be? Come on. We don't really need to ask these questions.
Great news, though.
Yes. Sorry.
Like, not that the. I think last week there was some question about how he phrased it, and I think some people on social media, I know I saw Sal interacting with some people that felt like McDermott seemed pessimistic to them anyway, like reading the quotes. And I had heard the whole thing, and like Sal was like, no, I think he's optimistic. I don't know where you're getting pessimism from. I think they think he's going to come back. Like, this isn't just lip service. So I'm glad to get that practice window activated and have him come back.
Sometimes the words don't properly convey
I know.
The message.
Yeah.
Before it gets too far away from us, I know we're all excited about Sunday coming up. Can I point out three stupid things that happened late in the first half yesterday?
Sure.
Number one, the Spencer Brown penalty on Allen's touchdown. What a dumb league.
Yeah.
Unsportsmanlike conduct. Allen, it was borderline late. I mean, it could have been called late.
It could have. I didn't think. I thought the Colt guy let up appropriately, and they tumbled out of bounds. Like he was.
Yep, fine.
I did not think there was anything egregious there. I get Brown wanting to go because your quarterback tumbles like that. You want to get on the scene. He didn't even do anything. He just went there and stood by the guy.
He tapped him in the head.
Yeah. Oh, he did.
Raising to the point of a headbutt.
Right.
Just a head, like a little dude. That was the flag. Wow. And come on.
I did not notice that the head bonk. I'm going to go with bonk instead of butt. Is a bonk less than a butt? I think it is. Anyway, I didn't notice that. I thought this came up on postgame. I think we thought maybe he said something. That you know, the official
maybe
overheard that was egregious, and like that was why the flag. But the head.
What do you have contact to say to another player in the NFL to get a flag? How bad would that have to be? Maybe I don't know that he didn't. I don't know that he didn't.
Right. I don't know that he did either. I was speculating. Like it didn't look like anything really. So I thought it was kind of a weird flag in the first place.
So 13-10. Penalty was accepted, but the Bills still kicked off from the 35.
Yeah, it was the extra point got pushed back 15 yards. He had to kick a long extra point.
Okay, right. 47-yard extra point.
Yeah, or 10, whatever.
That's, I think, the right decision by the Colts.
Sure.
Push back the extra point.
Yeah.
Makes it anyway. 17-13. Colts have 3rd-and-1 on their 39. Jonathan Taylor for no gain.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
Good. Brilliant.
And then they came out.
I can see why you're an NFL head coach.
Yep. I know what comes next.
And then the Bills call timeout. 4th-and-1. Flacco takes the intentional delay of game.
It was such a great great angle that they showed that live from. Like you're just staring at Flacco barking out whatever he's barking out. Just like he is so not snapping this ball. There's just no way this ball's getting snapped.
For all that football is, to have that be a part of it is embarrassing.
Yep.
The whole charade, you're Indianapolis. Guys, you're Indianapolis. Not to mention my point from all day, you have Richardson, who could actually basically breathe and get a first
probably
down.
Probably easily convert that if you wanted. Yeah.
And make the third down call easier. But no, I can't do that because we're just trying to win. So while you're not trying to win.
Real quick, I know you got a third thing, right?
Is that
the second thing?
I got an hour and a half.
I don't want to derail you on the third thing. That moment, I liked the broadcast yesterday. I think it's, as these things go, I mean, it's not a work of art or anything, but I didn't find it annoying, except that I think they really missed the Colts taking the 5-yard penalty. They somewhat, one of them, I think it was McCourty, criticized them for like taking the penalty. And I'm watching thinking, no, they're going to kick it to you. And they want to save the time. The 5 yards doesn't mean jack to them right there. They want to make sure they have the timeout. Because if the Bills get stuck in the mud here, they're going to use their timeouts on defense to get the ball back. Try to, get a field goal. So, like, don't take a timeout at your, would you say they were the 31?
39. Like, yeah, I agree.
The 5 yards, big whoop. So, I thought they missed that. They did get to it when the Bills then started their drive. They got kind of in the weeds a little bit, and that's when they made a point about it. Like, oh, see, now they've got the timeouts here. And so, they got around to sort of making it right. But in the moment, I think they missed it.
Well, all of it's really dumb. Probably the third down play call should have been better. What are we doing if, like, Allen is the quarterback of the Bills? I know you don't have him. You might have a sort of a
facsimile. Format. Yeah.
Yes, like sort of facsimile of him, but you choose not to use him because that passes understanding. So if they're giving the ball to Cook on 3rd-and-1, how do we feel? Like we're calling post game shows,
right? Why? What are you doing? Right.
So anyway, that's the whole sequence, as you point out. The Colts save. They have 2 timeouts left at this point. They save them and punt. And the Bills get the ball at the 11. Allen to Knox for 6. 2nd-and-4. 56 seconds. Deion Dawkins, false start. Enough with the false starts. Deion Dawkins, false start. So second and nine, and they accept the runoff.
Right.
So it's second and nine from their own 12. Allen to Ty Johnson for seven, timeout Colts. Do you remember, if you are a Bills fan, how you felt when Indianapolis called that timeout?
Thank you.
Do you not follow the league, Indianapolis? You really want to do that? You really want to dare Josh Allen, who can run for it with his eyes closed, that opportunity, third and two at the 19? You didn't want to go for it on fourth and one at the 39, but now what? You're hoping to get a stop and then a miracle field goal? Like, that's the master plan against him?
Yeah.
So the Colts give the Bills the free timeout. Then Allen's Ty Johnson, timeout number two. You're not there yet. But the worst-case scenario for the Bills should be halftime.
Mm-hmm.
First and 10 from their 27, 30 seconds. Incomplete for Samuel. 23 seconds. Incomplete for Shakir. Who knew that was possible?
Right.
Incomplete for Shakir. Who's ever heard of that? 19 seconds, third and 10. Allen to Hollins for 44.
Right.
Field goal.
Yep.
Just, I'll never be at peace because I watch football, and I can't believe some people have the jobs that they have when they are just this unqualified to understand strategy and just what are you doing calling that timeout? You're playing for a miracle field goal at halftime or a turnover, which it's just a bad job. So,
and the Bills were out of timeouts at that time, right?
No, they used their second.
Okay.
They didn't need to use their timeouts. And then the Hollins play, did they spike it?
No, he ran out of bounds.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
So he caught that ball.
Oh, he ran out of bounds, right.
He caught that ball, got up, and ran out of bounds.
So they didn't need the timeout there. Allen incomplete, and then the field goal from Bass. Indianapolis, you should be contracted.
Another good day from Bass.
Yeah.
Made them all.
You're not telling me that in the way that you think, like, I'm going to be that surprised.
No.
Because he's a good kicker, and
it's been a good
you
kicker.
Miss, like, a couple, then, oh, my God. But he's still a good kicker. Tucker misses a lot now.
Yeah.
I wonder if they're down on him, Baltimore. I don't know what his numbers are. I could look, I guess. Yeah. But
the Houston guy missed a big one yesterday. It was long. It was 58.
Yeah.
But he missed. Like, he's like the guy I feel like I think of, like him and Butker. I feel like this Fairbairn's even got a bigger leg than Butker. Like, he's a bomber, that guy. So that was big.
Have you ever seen in your life a sequence like the last 2 minutes of that game where the Detroit kicker essentially shaves the goalpost on each side of his 250-plus yard kicks in the last 2 minutes of that game? I mean, that was just incredible.
Yeah.
Both of them are right at it. And the first one looked like it could have hit the goalpost on the right? And the second one looked like it did hit the flag at the top of the goalpost, and they both went in. Both went through for Bates,
yep.
Who's from Houston and never played high school football, they said. He's a soccer player.
Yeah, I saw. It was funny. Was it with Ross last week that we were talking about kickers?
Yep.
And he's like, they're all these soccer players and all this sort of stuff. And this guy, his quote after the game was like, this is incredible. I'm living a dream here. I'm in the NFL. I can't believe it. I was a soccer player.
Yeah. Ross nailed it.
The perfect description.
He gets Melissa Stark treatment
right.
After that game, right. Which was an incredible game, I thought.
It really was.
It gave to me Bills Dolphins vibes, where like Houston got the fluke turnovers and the lead, and you know they're good, but they're not as good as the team they're playing.
Right.
And Detroit just got there. Like, what a super physical game that was, and what a win.
Yeah.
Better win than a bad loss, I think. That's an incredible win, Detroit. And that just felt like Bills in Baltimore a couple years ago, Bills in Miami every time they play them, just, yeah, we'll give, it's like the Globetrotters.
We'll get there.
What do you want? A 10-point lead? What do you want?
Right.
Just tell us. What do you want? And we're still going to beat you. Damn, the Lions. 803-0550, Football Monday. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR. Football Monday on WGR. Tonight, it's Miami at the Rams. 2.5, 48.5. So, 26.25. 26.5, 20. Never mind.
Good job.
25.5, 23. Final. 25.5, 23. Rams. Here's what they don't tell you. Today was 59 degrees, I saw. So, my son had a lacrosse tournament in Lancaster. Great day. I mean, Veterans Day tournament. I saw 21st annual, and so many schools were there, and it was just like really
awesome.
It's almost like a reunion at this point with different parents from different schools and different clubs, kind of all there together. 59 degrees. You'd think I would know.
That's the wind is going to be cutting.
59 degrees at like 10:30 this morning or something. I step outside, bright sunshine. Oh, I don't need a jacket.
Oh boy.
I'll wear jeans. Begrudgingly.
Mm-hmm.
What they don't tell you is one cloud. It's
all,
over.
It's all over.
It's right. Just, you know, right. Winter hat, coat, yeah. Scarf, earmuffs.
Yeah.
And you have to just sort of go through life carrying all your clothes around.
Yep.
Because if the sun is out, I'm going to be hot.
Yeah. You need some version of what I used to have in the truck, which I would call the rink bag.
I need a rink bag.
I need a rink bag. Is it going to be so cold in this place that I need gloves, even though it's March? You never know. Rink bag.
Yep.
Now I just have rink sweatshirt. I had a bag for a while with a different stuff. Now I just have a sweatshirt in case I need a sweatshirt. I always have that. But
maybe I need to build a closet in my car.
Yes.
Or something, just to whatever comes up.
Your vehicle has a trunk.
It does. Friday,
that would suit it.
Friday, we spent the day Niagara on the Lake, went to a play, walked around. We love to do that. Wineries. And so, again, like, oh, this is the best. I wish I'd worn shorts. One cloud, and it was going to snow.
You've lived here all your life.
I know. I should know, but I don't. And I'm blaming the man.
Kid outdoor sports in November. Yeah, you need
what was I doing?
You need a wardrobe.
Literally no coat.
Yeah, that's a horrible job by you.
Even my son, like, it's my son. So he walks outside. He just checks the weather before we leave. Like, oh, I'm just going to wear shorts. Okay. Just that it starts to rain. It was so cold today. I thought 59 was a good temperature.
Yeah, I know.
That's where fall gets into trouble.
Yes.
Because these are like sort of good fall days. One cloud. You're in tough.
Right.
There's the report. Yesterday's game, and oh, by the way, how about the next one? Bills and Kansas City Sunday afternoon. We spent a lot of time earlier today. Wasn't that much earlier because we started late with the hockey game, but on like incentives and just how maybe you can get a little twisted here with this one, trying to figure out what to do about 50-50-ish injured guys and, I don't know, how you want to play it out. This, I think, you know, you play to your absolute fullest to try to win the game, but when it comes to injuries and maybe certain other things, it's not that simple. 803-0550, Bills and Chiefs, Sunday, 425 here on WGR.
It's Mike Shope.
It's nothing you did.
It's not you, it's me.
It's not you, it's you, but you didn't cross me.
And the Bulldog.
Why did I choose? Why did I just stay in school?
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Football Monday, the Bills win again. So is it now 56-20, right? Or is it 57? I never remember when I say things. Last 76 games?
I felt like, I think it should be 56-20. I think last week you let off with it 55-20 after they beat
Miami,
right.
Yep.
So I
55-20, now 56-20.
56-20, I think, is where we're at, yeah.
Football Monday on WGR. Lines open for you at 803-0550. Monday Night Football is Dolphins-Rams. What's the best rivalry in the league?
Ooh. I mean, Pittsburgh and Baltimore are pretty good.
There are three candidates in Week 11.
Oh, yeah?
To be considered the best rivalry in the league.
I imagine you're asking because of Bills and Chiefs. Bengals-Baltimore is pretty good, too. That's been playoffs, too.
That's right.
I mean, Green Bay-Chicago is legendary, and they play this week.
Yes.
So that's it. Those are the games.
Those are the three I had in mind.
Washington, Philly, maybe is a little tasty too. That's Thursday.
I think I'm not sure I'm right. Maybe for Ross, I think Washington is at best Philadelphia's third rival.
Yeah, Dallas Giants and the Giants Dallas. First. Yeah,
I think it's got to be third at best.
Yeah, I forced that. Seattle, San Francisco had been pretty good too. They play this week too.
Yeah.
That was good for as the Niners were getting good and Seattle was Legion of Boom and like that. That's been nasty.
That's right.
At times.
That's right.
So that's pretty tasty.
Atlanta, Denver.
That's a they've never played.
They've never played.
There's a Super Bowl, but yeah, that doesn't count.
Oh, there was.
Right.
Nobody watched that.
Tough to say about a Super Bowl matchup that they've never played.
Nobody watched that.
But yeah, no, those are pretty tasty. And it's that, you know, Seattle, San Francisco is 4:05 while the Bills are playing at 4:25. So, you know, I'm not going to be paying a lot of attention to that. But
the Rams play the Patriots. They've played in the Super Bowl twice.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Maybe this is all intentional. I don't know how you explain Jaguars, Lions, but
yeah.
It's like when Interleague started in baseball.
Vikings, Titans. Woo!
It's like when Interleague started in baseball, like, oh, the Yankees and the Mets. The Dodgers and the Angels, like all these cool rivals. And then you have the Pirates and the Twins, and nobody, the critics are going to point right to the one, the meaningless teams with no rivalry, you know, like that. So you're going to have leftovers, I guess, but it does seem like it might be intentional. Colts Jets played in a Super Bowl, I believe. Look at this week. We found something. Even if it is Atlanta and Denver and the Rams, right, and the Patriots.
Right.
We found something.
Browns and Saints too. They met in a Super Bowl. Sorry, that was not necessary. Have you seen any of the pictures of them having a shade up to protect Mike McCarthy from the sun while he's doing a news conference today?
What a disaster!
Some of the stuff yesterday. The late window was, you know, the games weren't that great as it turned out. It was mostly blowouts, right? But you had the high comedy of the things, you know, everything making the round. Like, you know, CeeDee Lamb can't see the ball coming to him in the end zone, which is just hilarious. And Jerry Jones being asked about it, just like, we know what time the sun, we know where the sun's gonna be. We know how, like, it's so great.
He brought the moon into it.
Yes, he did. Yes, brilliant. The Jets completely falling apart was delicious,
man.
In Arizona. I mean, what a joke. Just the 4 o'clock window was a blast after the Bills won. I mean,
it was three games, the Jet game, the Dallas game, and then Tennessee Chargers. Did you watch any of that?
I saw a couple of plays on Red Zone, I think.
The Chargers are kind of rolling.
Yeah. Yeah. Johnson made another, was open, nice throw. Like, he's, like, that's week over week now. He's consistently producing.
They got Gus Edwards back, which I did not expect to really matter, but they used him a lot. They're kind of rolling. Who's their big rivalry with, Cincinnati on Sunday night? That's good, too. That was supposed to be Colts-Jets. And
right.
They flexed it out.
Right.
Thank goodness. Imagine imagine that Sunday night. At least we have our game kind of bleeds into it.
Right.
So we wouldn't have to watch the whole thing.
Right. Yeah, we'll be doing post game for, like, you know, almost a half of that game as it probably turns out.
So we've had, you mentioned Mike McCarthy. Dallas is what now? 3-6. They play Monday night against Houston, by the way, which is not the same kind of rivalry game, but it's also,
yeah, it's interstate,
Texas.
Yeah.
And
intrastate, I should have said.
I've never understood that one. I've never known the difference. I know there is a difference. I just would always have to think about which one is which.
Well, interstate highways go through many states, so those are interstates. Intrastate is contained within the state.
I got it. That's. I'm sure you're right. So
I hope so.
We have had two coaches fired already this year. Not today. Not trying to get everybody excited.
You didn't miss anything.
We had
the Saints guy,
Dennis Allen,
yeah.
Robert Saleh before him.
Right.
It seems like there could be three or more additional before the season is over. Or could be. Not should be. what did I say? Could be. McCarthy being one, if the situation just completely falls apart. Has it not already? They have been down 20 points or more in their last five home games.
Including last year's Green Bay playoff game.
Right.
Right.
Come on. I mean, you can't even be competitive in your own stadium at all. Right. New Orleans. So,
right.
I don't know if there's a change because not every owner would do that. He has done it before, Jones, and I think he bristled when that question came up a couple weeks ago. He's bristling at everybody now.
Right.
It's just
he's
late.
He's bristly.
It's late.
The Bears guy's got to be in real trouble.
The Bears guy, that's like the saddest team in the league, I think.
You're always, like, always. I don't want to make it sound like you're like, you know, obsessed with it. But you'll point out McDermott and Allen. Like, they're just not a lot of interaction that we see on TV anyway. He comes to the sideline. It's just not. I think I saw McDermott yesterday after the failed fourth down play pat him on the butt as he walked by.
He clapped.
Yeah.
He looked at him.
Yeah,
and then, he clapped. And, and Allen walked by. We couldn't get a look at Allen's face.
And I think he patted him with the call sheet or something as he walked by. So anyway. Did you see Eberflus and Caleb Williams sitting on the bench? There's a close-up, super close-up of, like, so the camera's closer to Williams. Like, you got a profile shot of Williams, the side of his face, and it's a weird, the whole video is weird because it's so close-up. Like, you can almost, like, see inside Williams' ears. It's like, the shot is just so tight. It's just like, what am I doing here? But anyway, and Eberflus is on his left. Talking and the shot pulls out a little and you see Eberflus sort of smiling, like maybe he said something, an anecdote, or who knows, I could guess, right? I am guessing, but something lighthearted, and was sort of laughing or smiling, and Williams turns his head away and it's just like, oh man, like he's rolling his eyes and just like, what are we even doing here?
It's a disaster.
What a terrible look. And then this guy's phone this morning, like he's trying to do I assume it's a regular appearance on a radio show. His phone died. The host is like, Coach, your phone's as bad as your offense or something.
Oh.
It's just bad. Just bad. It is raining hard.
Can't say that.
On the Bears. I don't know if you said it to him or after but he dropped out like three different times or something. And eventually it got to, your phone is as...
It's a good line.
It sure is.
I could see myself, if I thought of it, I could see myself saying it, but not to the guy.
Right, right.
Not to you on the phone when you're listening.
I don't know if it was directly at, or after it was over or what, but I just saw that quote attached to that. So
well,
he's got to be in real trouble there.
Here's a thing, like this has sort of been a thing of mine going back to before the Bills were good. All those years, and you're trying to make it work with quarterbacks who just don't have it. It was Manuel and Marone, I think, whatever year that was. And one thing that excited me about it was that it lined up. That they did not stick a quarterback with a coach who was already kind of on fumes. Todd Bowles and Darnold. Wasn't it Todd Bowles? Or was it not even, was it someone else? I think it was him.
Yeah, it was Bowles first and then Gase after that, I think was the order there.
Yeah. And so I was excited about Manuel and Marone having each other to sort of start off together, right? Like, all right, well, we're both need each other here.
And that definitely was 13. That's Manuel's draft year, and Marone got here, and because they're drafting a quarterback, we thought maybe they were going to draft Ryan Nassib from Syracuse.
That's right. So that didn't work out. Nothing's perfect. But I just think if I were an owner, I would want the quarterback and the coach to come in together. And that worried me for McDermott because, I mean, you saw that they traded away literally the draft pick for Patrick Mahomes, right? Like they were not ready to do that.
Mm-hmm.
They looked at different free agents. They ended up on Taylor. I think they were, who was the quarterback that they were, Brian Hoyer. Like they wanted maybe, tall one, Glennon. They wanted somebody else.
Yep.
But we know at least that they did not want to draft and start a rookie year one. You didn't have Bean in place yet. I don't know. It was an interesting, if it was entirely McDermott's choice, it was a dangerous choice because I don't think that is ideal. You have, I think it's more, however, more dangerous the other way around, where you have the quarterback and then you make the coaching change.
Yes, I agree. If you wait a year and you're not in sync that way, at least the coach has chosen the quarterback.
If, however, if the Bills had gone 5-11, this is, has the show ever sounded older, 16-game seasons, if the Bills had gone 5-11 in McDermott's first year, he would have a different attitude about year two. The pressure would be greater. He would have to win. By ending the drought, he's got time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so, and they were very lucky that year. Like, the numbers thought they were a very much a mediocre team. They get in. Most football people would think that that's probably to their credit because they don't want to talk ever acknowledge luck. So now you've got time, and go get your quarterback, which of course they put 100% of their effort into doing that, and they hit with Allen. Look at the Bears. Look at the Bears last decade. So John Fox, 2015 through 17, last place every year. After 2 years of that, Trubisky. And so Fox, who's just on his last breath here right. as an NFL coach, gets, put it the other way, Trubisky gets John Fox. How did that go?
After two horrible seasons. Yeah, that's not an ideal landing spot for any young quarterback.
So that team went 5-11. They changed to Nagy. They go 12-4. That really happened. The Bears had a great season. They lose in the playoffs, double doink, and onward. So then Trubisky gets canned, essentially, and they draft Justin Fields. Nagy is still the coach. They've had 3 years in a row without a winning record. Mm-hmm. He's going on to his fourth year. He's kind of a joke by then. They draft Fields and put him with Nagy, who does what? Andy Dalton.
Mm-hmm.
How did Fields turn out? I mean, that's not over. I guess it's not either for Trubisky.
No.
But so then Fields gets 3 years. The second year for Fields, they make the change just like they did for Trubisky, from right. Fox to Nagy. They go from Nagy to Eberflus. And, yeah, no, they get the first pick by a fluke. They get the first pick in the draft.
Right.
They keep, who is Matt Eberflus? They keep him. He shaved, and they liked him more. The fans liked because he grew a beard, and he had better hair, and, like, the vibes were good. Caleb Williams, here you go. Now, right. you be the third Bears quarterback in, like, 7 years. Or 8 years, to essentially you walk in to a coaching staff that had better win immediately.
Yeah, they're already floating in the ocean hoping someone with a life preserver comes by the time the quarterback walks in the door. That's horrible.
And so Caleb Williams, just like Fields before him and just like Trubisky before that, will definitely have a new coach going into his second season. Allen would tell you. Mahomes would tell you, Lamar Jackson would tell you, how huge an advantage they have been afforded by having
stability.
Yep. And that goes both ways, because the player has to be better than Trubisky or better than Fields. But how much better? We know how just fickle the whole thing is with coaching staff and surroundings and all this stuff. So
that'll be interesting to watch, because I wonder, on one hand, the reputation of the organization, everything you've just laid out here, could be the kind of thing that keeps, say, the Houston guy or Detroit's guy, who are we talking about here? Slowick and Johnson, right?
Yep.
Those are the names, respectively, Houston and Detroit, that both were thought to be, like, pick a job. You have any job you want that's available last offseason, and they both stayed put. Does the reputation of the Bears organization, like, is there a... Don't go there. You just can't win there. You just can't win there. Just doing ownership, whatever. There's something, right? Or is Caleb Williams and Roma Dunze and DJ Moore, like, is that enough of a draw to, like, get one of these guys to be like, I can go there and do that. I can do that. That's a great spot. Like, I wonder about that with them, because the players, I think, would make it attractive. But I just don't know. It feels, you know, the jokes about Chicago and how they've never had this player are endless. They really never have. And so now they get him, and how's it going? Like, he's sitting on the bench thinking his coach is a chump, is that's how it's going.
They had 142 yards against New England.
Right.
The Patriots ran for more yards than the Bears' total yards in that game. The Patriots. Three losses in a row. The Hail Maryland was the first.
Right.
Would have put them at 5-2, by the way. One play away from 5-2. Speaking of Fickell, now they're 4-5.
Have they not scored a touchdown since before that happened?
Yes. That's correct.
Wow. So two whole games since then, and they've not. Wow. That's
two whole games, the second of which, reminder, was against New England.
Right.
And the Washington game, they did score. All right, they scored late in the fourth to take the lead there. That's their last touchdown.
Man.
Wait, I want to make sure of that, because there was a safety in that Arizona game, since we're on the air, right?
Yeah. I just bring it up because I thought I heard that yesterday, that they had not scored.
It's correct.
Okay.
The Bears had three field goals last week, and I guess one yesterday. Brutal.
Yep.
So there could be two or three more coaching changes. I don't know. Some teams would just never do it, but Bears, Giants. Giants sound like he's making a quarterback change. Today he said they're evaluating it.
Yeah.
They're on bye.
Yeah.
Bye week's coming up. You won't miss these teams. Arizona, Tampa Bay, the Giants, and Carolina. I'm really hostile toward a lot of teams.
I need a buy from the Giants.
Arizona looks good.
Yeah, they do. Jacksonville will fire their coach, right?
Yeah, maybe them too.
That's another team that goes on that list. The only thing that will save Antonio Pierce in Vegas is that he's in his first year. But that doesn't have to mean anything.
He technically second?
Oh, right. He took over last year, right? Cigars.
What was cigars?
They were all, they won the first game with him and they had victory cigars in the locker room. They were also thrilled with, you know, themselves.
Beating Carolina or something.
Whatever they did. I don't remember who was against, but it was a big deal.
They did beat the Chiefs.
Yeah.
Bills would like to do that this week. That'll be they will have the chance.
I would have liked Denver to do that yesterday.
Yes.
It would have been really, really nice.
On this Veterans Day, we continue. Eric Wood joined us earlier today. Really good conversation about yesterday and then looking ahead to the Titanic matchup out in Orchard Park this weekend. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog Football Monday continues. This is WGR.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.